Part 3. Staying on Course. Chapter 8. Worry. Stop paying interest on a loan you never had. If you really think about it, the only people who don't have problems are dead. Problems are a sign of life, and everyone is going to have problems every single day. But the good news is that you don't have to make things worse by worrying about them. Unfortunately, most people choose to spend a great deal of time worrying. In fact, the average person probably spends more time worrying about house payments, job complications, possible illnesses, or personal relationships than thinking constructively. However, worry is a total waste. It will destroy your positive attitude, and it can destroy your life. The waste of worry. Worrying wastes your life in 4 important ways. 1. Worry wastes your time. In his book, Seeds of Greatness, Dr. Dennis Waitley reported a study from the University of Michigan. The study discovered that most worries aren't real. In fact, they found out that 95% of worries are unwarranted. They focus on something that happened in the past over which you have no control, or they focus on things that are simply petty. Only 5% of worries are real or justifiable. As Mark Twain once said, "I've had a long life, and I've had a lot of troubles, most of which never happened." Worrying wastes your time. For example, if you spend an hour a day worrying about something you have no control over, just think of all the time you lose. In a year, you will have worried for 365 hours. That's more than 15 days of your life totally wasted. Just think of the difference it would make if you spent a fraction of that time doing something more productive and enjoyable, such as reading a self-help book or working on your attitude. 2. Worry wastes your energy. Remember the story of the children of Israel who left Egypt to go to the Promised Land? That journey should have taken 11 days, but it took them 40 years. They were so worried they wouldn't be able to take over the Promised Land that they allowed it to slow them down. It wasn't distance that separated them from the Promised Land. It was worry. In a very similar sense, worry wastes your energy. When you worry, your mind goes around and around in the same groove, and you never get anywhere. You don't come to any conclusions, and you don't solve any problems. So these behaviors are illogical and irrational at best. Strangely enough, worry usually makes things worse. The more you worry about something, the more upset you become. And the more upset you become, the more likely you are to make bad decisions. And bad decisions always lead to bad outcomes. 3. Worry wastes your health. Medical studies show that worry is perhaps the most corrosive emotion to affect the body or mind. Dr. Alexis Carrel, the Nobel Prize winner in medicine, declared years ago that businessmen who do not know how to fight worry die young. And so do all professionals, construction workers, computer technicians, and everybody else. The word worry comes from the Anglo-Saxon verb regan. It means choke or strangle. If someone were to come up to you, grasp you around the neck, and squeeze as hard as they could, they would be choking the life out of you. And you do the same thing to yourself when you spend time in useless worry. Way back in the 1940s, Dr. O.F. Gober, chief physician of the Gulf, Colorado, and Santa Fe Hospital Association, said, 70% of all patients who come to physicians could cure themselves if they only got rid of their fears and worries. Ever since that time, doctors have been saying pretty much the same thing. When you say, "I'm worried sick," many times that is exactly what happens. From a biological point of view, you are not constructed to handle the poisonous venom that worry injects into your system. 4. Worry wastes your spirituality. In its simplest terms, worry is negative goal setting. It focuses your attention on what you don't want to happen, which is the exact opposite of spirituality. Spirituality focuses your attention on what you do want to happen. The two fight against each other. The plain truth is this: Worry and faith are incompatible. The more you have of one, the less you have of the other. Even the Bible says that. In Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7, Paul says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done. If you do this, you will experience God's peace, which is far more wonderful than the human mind can understand." In other words, if you spend your time on worry, you won't experience peace. Worry wastes your spirituality. A reporter found that out when he was given an exclusive interview with the devil. When the reporter arrived in hell, the devil gave him a tour through his Hall of Fame, where he displayed all the various weapons that he used to bring about war, crime, disease, and disaster. He carefully showed the reporter everything from cocaine to the nuclear bomb. Then the devil asked, "Would you like to see my favorite, all-time most destructive weapon?" The reporter said, "You bet." The devil became very excited. They walked down this long hall, deep into the dungeons of hell, and finally they arrived at a huge steel door locked closed by many heavy chains and bolts. The devil unlocked the door and swung it open. The reporter was surprised to see nothing but a little wedge of wood on an illuminated pedestal. The reporter asked, "What's this?" "That," the devil explained, "is my greatest weapon of all time. It's the wedge of worry." Worry puts a wedge between you and God. And that's what I like to see, because then I've got you. Where does worry come from? If worry is a total waste, you may be wondering why people bother to worry. Where does worry come from? Worry can come from a number of sources, but two causes in particular often give people the most difficulty. One, you may have been taught to worry about anything new, different, or out of the ordinary. You may have been taught to equate the unknown with danger. I remember a television commercial that made this cause of worry very clear. The commercial featured an art teacher walking around a classroom saying, "The lines are our friends. Stay within the lines." Perhaps you were told growing up to be careful, watch where you're going, take it easy, and not talk to strangers. Certainly some good existed in those messages, but you may have been preconditioned to be too cautious, and as a result, anything new may have become a cause for worry. And that worry of being outside the lines may have killed off some of your natural creativity. You see this happen in lots of people. Up to the age of 5, most kids use 95% of their creative capacity. Then they go to school, and by the age of 12, they use only 20% of their creative capacity. By adulthood, the average person is down to 10%. Apparently, the pressure to do the right thing, do what's expected, and maintain the way we've always done it gets so strong that it stifles creativity. 2, you may have been taught to strive for external security. That's what most cultures teach, so it's no wonder if you bought into those beliefs. Most secular cultures seem to say that you can be free of your worries and find true security if you just have enough of certain things. If you have enough money, a big enough house, a nice enough car, a good enough job, or a pretty enough spouse, then, they seem to say, you can be secure and have a life of joy and contentment. When you think about it logically, this belief is ridiculous. You'll never have enough of anything to wipe away all your worries. A depression could come and wipe out all of your money, your job, house, and cars. A huge conflict could destroy your relationships. Total external security is never possible. But if that's what you're working for, you'll always be prone to worry. The only kind of security worth pursuing is internal security. With this type of security, you have so much confidence in yourself and so much faith in your God that you don't have room for worry. What are you focused on? External or internal security? Here's a little test to find out. Suppose you were abducted and dropped in a field somewhere in China. You have no Chinese language skills, money, or clothing. You're in a new culture and a new climate. Would you survive or would you perish? Would you find a way to get shelter, make friends, and find food? Or would you freak out? If you had a great positive attitude, if you had internal security, you would do just fine. By using the techniques in this chapter, you can get rid of your worries and gain internal security. Worry is a choice. You may be thinking, I've spent my whole life worrying. There's nothing I can do about it. That's just the way I am. I can't help it. But you do have a choice. You can choose to let go of worry. But lots of people don't want to let go. They act like a certain group of monkeys in Africa does. A group of scientists knew that this particular kind of monkey could be captured for study if they simply gave the monkeys the right kind of choice. So the scientists went out into the jungle and made a trap out of a glass bottle with a long, narrow neck. They filled the bottle with nuts, staked it to the floor of the jungle, and went back to camp, confident that the monkeys would be easily captured. And indeed they were. The monkeys smelled the nuts, put their hands in the bottle, and grabbed a fistful. And then they were trapped. Their fists would no longer fit through the narrow neck of the bottle because they wouldn't let go of the nuts. You might smile and think, how silly. And yet you may be guilty of behaving the same way. Your problems may stick to you because you simply won't let go. You choose to keep on worrying about them. But you can choose to replace your worries with healthier behavior. Stop the worrying and get a better attitude by using the following 9 techniques. 1. Put worry into perspective. All too often, people jump to conclusions without getting the whole picture. And all too often, they jump to horrifying conclusions that bring on needless worry. Do you ever do that? Or do you wait until you get all the facts before reacting one way or another? As I would tell my students years ago, withhold evaluation until comprehension is complete. One mother was guilty of jumping to conclusions. As she prepared dinner in the kitchen, her little boy and the neighbor girl played in the sandbox outside. Suddenly, through the kitchen window, she heard the little boy say, "That's not the way my mother makes love." The mother was horrified and ran outside to investigate what was going on. She found her little son, in a superior manner, looking down at the little girl who had etched the letters LUV in the sand with her finger. Seeing the whole story, her worries dissipated. When you're about to worry, you also need to get the whole story. Put things in perspective. You'll find that your worries may seem rather trifling, or they may even go away. I learned that many years ago when I visited the refugee camps in Thailand back in the 1980s. During that time, hundreds of thousands of people were fleeing to the safety of Thailand from the genocide taking place in Laos and Cambodia. But they couldn't stay there forever. So the frightened refugee families were interviewed by interpreters, United Nations officials, and placement specialists. I sat in those interviews and listened to the questions. Where might the families go? Everyone had a desire to go home, but if going home meant an almost certain death, where could the refugee families be sent? It was a worrisome question, to be sure. And then it hit me. I was worried about the flies in the refugee camp. I was worried about how nice my hotel room would be that night, and I was worried about the quality of the meal I would be served. When I put my worries into perspective, when I gave the refugee families a bit more empathy, all of my worries seemed to be somewhat irrelevant, or at least minuscule by comparison. The next time you're about to worry, gain some perspective by thinking about the worries you had 5 years ago. Chances are you can't even remember them, because they really weren't a big deal. Of the ones you do remember, how many actually came to pass? Probably not very many. So ask yourself when you feel overcome with worry, how important will this be in 5 years? 2. Realize you can cope. Regardless of what you might tell yourself, you're not weak and you're not incompetent. You probably have a great deal more power than you realize. And you have more than enough energy to handle almost any situation that comes your way. So don't sell yourself short. Realize that you can cope and you have no need to worry. One of my students, Paul, showed me what can happen when you finally realize you can cope. You don't have to worry, and you can move on with your life. When Paul was born, he was badly deformed. His arms and legs were so twisted that he never learned to walk or care for himself. At age 8, Paul heard the doctors tell his parents that he wouldn't live that long, so there was no sense in wasting any time or money on him. His parents were told it would be best to put him in an institution. So that's where Paul lived, until he was 68. It was then that Paul decided he had had enough. He was tired of worrying about his future. He wanted to live, not just exist. So he planned out his life and decided to go for it. That's when I met Paul. He showed up at one of my classes at the university where I taught. Paul said he wanted to get a college degree, then a master's degree, and go into the counseling profession. He wanted to help other people. I couldn't help but admire him. Paul had so little. He had hardly any money, no family members, and only a few years of life. All he had was the person he hired to push him from class to class, care for his physical needs, and write out the papers he dictated. But he had a plan, and he was taking the risks to make his plan a reality. I watched Paul move ahead as he took several classes from me at the university. I watched him as he started a Toastmasters club on campus, and as he got elected to a seat on the Student Senate. Paul had learned that he could cope with his challenges. Can the same be said about you? Do you feel up to the task and up to the challenge? Or do you doubt yourself and worry about whether or not you can handle the situations in front of you? If you doubt yourself and need a bit more confidence, spend some more time with the chapter on self-esteem. You simply should not minimize what you are able to do and what you're able to cope with. Kemmons Wilson, the founder of Holiday Inn, realized he could cope. In fact, it was the very skill that made him successful. When he was asked to speak at his former high school, Kemmons said, "I don't know why I'm here. I didn't graduate from high school, and I never worked a full day in my life. So I'll give you the advice I follow. Just work half days, and it doesn't matter which 12 hours you work, the first half or the second half." 3. Do it anyway. Perhaps the wisest American to have ever lived was Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, "Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain." In other words, it takes action to get rid of a worry. Instead of thinking about your worrisome situation over and over, take action and the worry will go away. Let's say, for example, that you're worried about an upcoming conversation you need to have with your boss. You spend days and nights worried about what you should say. In fact, you get so worried that you don't say anything at all. You just stew over it. A person with a positive attitude would do it anyway. She would think about what needed to be said and the best way to say it. And then she would go ahead and say it. No matter what the outcome, that particular worry would be gone. Robert Louis Stevenson, the author of Treasure Island, knew about the strategy of doing it anyway. In his spare time, he canoed, sailed, hiked, and traveled. But it wasn't widely known that Stevenson suffered from years of illness. He talked in his books of going to bed weary and getting up sick year after year. He finally died of tuberculosis and a stroke at age 44. Now, he could have lived his whole life filled with worry. He could have worried about his health and what would become of him. He could have worried his life away and done nothing, but he did it anyway. Stevenson wrote, "I was made for a contest, and the powers that be have willed that my battlefield shall be the inglorious one of the bed and the medicine bottle." I beg to differ. A person who stands up to worry, fear, and pain is not inglorious. He's a champion. Maurice Chevalier showed us that. Even though he was one of the most famous actors of his time, in the middle of his career, he suffered a setback. As he was going on stage one night, he felt terribly dizzy. His brain seemed on fire, and the cues reached him from a far distance. He stammered, he stumbled, and the other actors had to cover for him that night. They covered for him for weeks and weeks, and finally he couldn't go on any longer. He needed the care of a doctor. Chevalier was filled with worry about his health, his acting career, and his future. He was worried that it might all be over. So his doctor told him to spend a few weeks in a small town in the southern part of France take some long walks, and repair his damaged nervous system. Eventually, the doctor told him, "There's a small village hall in that little town. I want you to give a performance to the people." Chevalier answered, "I can't. I'm terrified. What guarantee is there that my mind won't go blank again?" The doctor said, "There are no guarantees. But fear is never a reason for quitting. It's only an excuse. In other words, do it anyway." Chevalier did perform in that small village hall, and it went fairly well. And he used that strategy for the rest of his career. He experienced many moments of fear and worry, but he never let it stop him again. He simply admitted the fear and did it anyway. Later on in life, Chevalier made a comment that is good advice for all of us. He said, "If you wait for the perfect moment, when all is safe and all is assured, it may never arrive. Mountains will not be climbed, races won, or lasting happiness achieved. So go ahead and do it anyway." In each of these cases, you'll notice a similarity. Emerson, Stevenson, and Chevalier weren't playing mental games. They didn't deny the challenges and struggles in front of them. They honestly admitted their fears and worries, but they refused to let worry take over. They took action instead, and their worries lost all power over them. The same thing will happen for you if you follow this approach. Stand up to your worry. Do it anyway. 4. Forget yourself. One of the greatest psychiatrists of the 20th century, Dr. Carl Menninger, was addressing a large audience of psychologists and psychiatrists on the topic of mental health. A question and answer period followed his speech. One person asked, "Dr. Menninger, if you were to meet somebody about to have a nervous breakdown, what would you advise the person to do?" Everyone expected him to recommend professional help. But Dr. Menninger, the old wise man, the great guru, said, "I'd tell them to go out and help somebody, because they almost always get healthy." Worry is self-absorption. It puts an extreme emphasis on self. What should I say? What should I do? What will others think of me? It's all about me, me, me. But as Menninger knew, if you stop thinking about yourself, at least temporarily, if you think about others and how you can help them, your worries will go away. You'll get healthy and have a more positive attitude. Florence Nightingale, the founder of the modern nursing profession, changed the whole world when she learned this strategy. When she stopped thinking about herself and thought about others, her worries died and her success grew. At one point, she wrote in her diary, "My God, what will become of me? I have no desire but to die. There is not a night that I do not lie down on my bed wishing that I may live no more. Unconsciousness is all that I desire." Talk about worry and despair. When she died 60 years later, it was said that she, along with the inventor of chloroform and the inventor of antiseptic, was one of the three people who alleviated the most suffering in the 19th century. And how did she get beyond her worries? She forgot about herself temporarily and went out and helped somebody else. I don't see any reason why you can't go out and do likewise. 5. Practice the presence of God. As mentioned above, worry and faith are incompatible. Worry and faith sit on opposite ends of the same teeter-totter. As your faith goes up, worry goes down. That's why someone wrote long ago, "Fear knocked at the door. When faith answered, no one was there." Of course, words like faith, God, and spirituality may seem like rather inappropriate words for a secular book on positive attitudes. And I know they are controversial, if not politically incorrect, topics for lots of people. I'm not here to preach or tell you what to believe, but I do feel responsible for telling you what works, and faith in God has worked for millions of people over the centuries. Faith is a very effective way of destroying negativity and worries and building positive attitudes. So how do you get more faith? One simple thing you can do is to practice the presence of God. Just imagine that God, the source of all that is good and positive, is right there with you. Think about it. Picture it. Visualize His presence. The more you practice, the less you worry. Brother Lawrence learned the power of this technique hundreds of years ago. A simple man who worked his entire adult life in the kitchen of a French monastery, he never liked his work. The hours were long and the work was hard, but he found a way to live a very happy, rewarding, and rich life by practicing the presence of God. He said it turned away his worries and frustrations as it brought about peace and tranquility. Whenever Brother Lawrence worked in the kitchen, he would think, "God is here, right now, with me." He would pray that God would be with him and give him peace. And those moments became very special to him. Some years later, he wrote in his book, Practice the Presence of God, "I would rather pray in my kitchen among the noise and clatter of the pots and pans than go to the most beautiful cathedral and commune there." If practicing the presence is difficult or seems too esoteric for you, you might try what Earl Hipp, the president of Human Resource Development Incorporated, recommends. He suggests that you picture yourself on a bicycle, traveling through your day, with God at the helm. He calls it God on a bike. "At first I saw God as my observer, my judge, keeping track of the things I did wrong, so as to know whether I merited heaven or hell when I die. He was out there, sort of like the president. I recognized his picture when I saw it, but I didn't really know him. Later on, when I began to recognize my higher power, it seemed as though life was rather like a bike ride, but it was a tandem bike, and God was in the back, helping me pedal." I don't know just when it was that he suggested that we change places, but life has not been the same since. Life with my higher power, that is. Life has gotten more exciting with God on the front seat. When I had control, I knew the way. It was a lot of work and often rather boring and predictable. It was usually the logically shortest distance between any two points. But when God took the lead, he knew delightful long cuts, up mountains and through rocky places at breakneck speeds. It was all I could do to hang on. Even though our journey looked like madness, he said, "Pedal." I worried and was anxious and asked, "Where are you taking me?" He laughed and didn't answer. That is when I started to learn to trust him. I forgot my boring life and entered into the adventure. When I'd say, "I'm scared," he would lean back and touch my hand. He took me to people with gifts that I needed, gifts of healing, acceptance, and joy. They gave me their gifts to take on my journey, our journey, God's and mine. Then we would be off again. He said, "Give the gifts away, they're extra baggage, too much weight." So I did, to all the people we met, and I found that in giving I received, and still our burden was light. I did not trust him at first, in control of my life. I thought he'd wreck it. But he knows bike secrets, knows how to make it bend to take sharp corners, jump to clear high rocks, and fly through short and scary passages. Now I'm learning to shut up and pedal in the strangest places. I'm beginning to enjoy the view and the cool breeze on my face. And when I forget, become fearful, and feel as if I just can't do it anymore, I feel God smiling and hear the gentle voice that says, "You just pedal." Need a bit more peace? A little less worry? Practice the presence of God. Take 2 or 3 minutes each day to actually visualize something like Brother Lawrence recommends, or even something as whimsical as God on a bike. I know it works for me. If you're struggling with this concept, you might remember the 80-year-old couple driving down the highway. As they were driving, Ma turned to Pa and asked, "Pa, whatever happened to us? Remember how it used to be years ago when we first got married? I'd sit close to you in the car, lay my head on your shoulder, look in your eyes, and tap your knee. And now look at us. You're over there, and I'm over here. Whatever happened to us, Pa?" He replied, "Ma, I ain't moved." The same thing applies to our spiritual lives. As the old line goes, if you feel distant from God, guess who moved? It's worth remembering if you're trying to overcome your worries and maintain your positive attitude. 6. stay in the present. If you live your life in the future or in the past, you are going to have problems with worry, because that's where worry lives. Worry has a difficult time living in the present. Perhaps you're worried about the future. Some people are constantly tied up in knots, worried about what tomorrow might bring. These people live their lives in the future. I remember when my brother and I were little, we would ride in the back seat of our car with my mom and dad in the front. We'd ask the normal childhood questions. How long is it going to take? When are we going to be there? My mom, the great worrier, would turn to us and reply, "How do we even know if we are going to get there?" She was worried about the future. Other people worry about the past. They think about the pain, the guilt, and the bad things that have happened to them. My grandmother was that way. Give her a chance, and she would tell you what somebody said to her 75 years ago. She would say such things as, "Back in 1922, Elsie said blah, blah, blah. And do you know what? She never apologized." My grandmother, as dear as she was, never learned the wisdom of Confucius, who said, "To be wronged is nothing unless you continue to remember it." The sad thing about living in the future or the past is that you could live your whole life and completely miss everything. But if you learn to live in the moment, right in the present, you'll get rid of the worries. I had to learn this skill. I used to spend much of my life living in the future and the past. Even when I took vacations, I would be worried about the work I had to do when I got back home, or I would be worried about something I should have done before I left home. I was supposedly on vacation, but I wasn't there when I was there. It's taken me a few years, but I've learned something about staying in the present. I've learned, for example, that when I'm hiking in the mountains, focusing on the beauty around me is more invigorating than worrying about how long it will take to get to the end of the trail. And I've learned that when it comes to work, focusing on the most important task on my desk is less worrisome than thinking about all the other things I have to do in the next few days. When I'm totally absorbed in the present, I cannot worry. This skill is not easy to learn, but you can do it. Start to be aware of those times when your mind wanders off to the future or the past. You may find yourself, for example, thinking about tomorrow's sales presentation while your spouse is talking to you. When you catch yourself doing it, stop. Bring your mind back to what your spouse is saying or whatever else is happening right in front of you. With practice, you can discipline your mind to stay focused on the present. 7. Use your IRA account. A psychiatrist once told me that the chief duty of a human being is to endure life. I thought about it and realized that if the purpose of life is just to be endured, how pathetic and miserable existence really is. Yes, we're going to have problems, but there's more to life than just enduring it. Vice President Hubert Humphrey, even when he was dying, had a much more optimistic outlook. He said the chief duty of a human being is to enjoy life, and one way to enjoy life is to use your IRA account. In the financial world, an IRA refers to a person's saved-up money and resources. But in the sometimes crazy, emotional world of worry, IRA refers to inspect, respect, and act. It refers to a logical three-step sequence that you can and should apply to your worries. First, inspect the worry. In fact, you might even sit down and inspect all your worries. Take them apart ruthlessly. Designate an entire hour each month as your worry day. Put a great big red W on your calendar and take a few minutes to write down all your worries and fears. Then go through each worry and ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen in that situation? You might even find that even if that particular worry becomes reality, it is not that big a deal. Then ask yourself, how likely is that worst thing to occur? You'll probably find that most of your worries aren't very likely to happen. They have very little substance. They're not worth worrying about. Back in 1953, Walt Disney applied this first step, the inspect step, at a big convention in Chicago. All the amusement park owners in the United States were gathered together at a late-night session, and Disney talked to them about his plan for a new kind of amusement park. They all said he was crazy and that the special effects he had in the movies could not be pulled off in an amusement park. They were all worried about his impending failure. Disney inspected their worries as well as his own. He concluded that the worries were not worth heeding, and he said, "I know better than to kill an idea without giving it a chance to live." Of course, at times, a worry of yours will seem somewhat reasonable. That's when you apply the second step. You respect that particular worry. You may find, for example, when you're going through the inspect step and you ask yourself what the worst thing that could happen is, that that worst thing probably will happen. Your worry is not groundless. Your worry cannot and should not be ignored. So respect it. Pay attention to it and decide to do something about that particular worry. At this point, the third step of your IRA kicks in immediately. You act. You may call someone you admire or someone who has gone through a similar problem. You may get some advice on what to do. And then you do something that prevents your worry from coming to fruition, or at least takes the sting out of it. So inspect, respect, and act. It works. Murphy proved that. Back in the 1920s, Murphy was a successful agent on Broadway booking dog acts and jugglers. You may remember the so-called Murphy's Law. He said, if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. That makes him sound terribly negative, as if he was a man filled with worry. But that was just the beginning of what he said. Murphy went on, therefore you anticipate it, you prepare for it, and then you need no excuses. You inspect, respect, and act. 8. Use self-encouragement. Many people add to their worries by asking what-if questions, such as, what if the car breaks down? Or, what if I lose my job? But asking these types of questions and filling your head with negative thoughts can be extremely destructive. A New York physician confirmed the destructiveness of negative thoughts when one of her patients, a local businessman, had a nervous breakdown. The patient said, I'm sure it's just from working too much. The doctor replied, people seldom have nervous breakdowns from overwork. Primarily, they think themselves into them. Nervous breakdowns happen when people give themselves too many negative, worrisome messages. Instead of worrying, you should fill your head with self-encouragement. For example, maybe you are afraid of trying new things. Rather than avoiding everything new, you could tell yourself, if I don't do it now, I'll just have to do it later. Or maybe you are afraid of being honest with someone about your feelings. Rather than worrying about the other person's reaction, you could tell yourself, if I don't tell her how I feel, she'll never know what I need. Self-encouragement will make it easier for you to confront your worries. I learned that lesson as a young man. Back in high school, I was under the impression that great grades led to great scholarships at great universities. So I studied all the time and graduated at the top of my class. But the scholarships didn't come. Due to financial necessity, I was more or less forced to live at home and attend the local college in town, and I wasn't happy about it. My dream of going to a prestigious private university far away had been dashed. Life felt unfair, and I spent my freshman year feeling angry and depressed. Then, in April of my freshman year, I saw an ad in the college newspaper for exciting, high-paying summer jobs in Europe. I thought that was for me. It would be an escape from my gloomy outlook on life. 2 months later, I arrived in London, eager to earn the big money and experience great adventure. It was then that I met a kindly old gentleman, quite by accident, and we discussed my upcoming job. He looked at my papers and said, "Oh, nobody has told you, have they? We get a lot of young American kids here in the summertime. We call those jobs slave labor." I did some quick checking. I found out that my job was bussing tables in a restaurant 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and that the pay was $14 a week. Now I was more upset than ever. I quickly telegraphed my father and asked him what I should do. He sent back a one-sentence response that read, "You can take anything for a short period of time." He was right. I took the job. I worked very hard those summer months. But I look back and realize that that was one of the most maturing experiences in my life. I learned that I could take anything for a short period of time, and I have used the same skill of self-encouragement thousands of times over the years. It has helped me confront and overcome my worries. What about you? Are you asking yourself too many worrisome what-if questions? Or are you encouraging yourself? In one of my seminars, a participant spoke out and said he had always wanted to go to law school, but he allowed his negative worries to stop him. What if he couldn't get into law school? What if he couldn't pass the bar exam? Besides that, he said, I'm 36. It would take 3 years to finish, and by then I'd be 39. One of his co-workers in the seminar responded, You can be 39 and a lawyer, or you can just be plain 39. It's your choice. It was exactly what the man needed to hear. It changed his life. He began telling himself, I'm a 39-year-old lawyer, using the sentence as the bit of self-encouragement that got him into law school and through his bar exam. I encourage you to write up some similar sentences. Have some encouraging phrases at your disposal and ready for use when worry comes into your life. If you just can't think of anything encouraging to tell yourself, if you're so far down and so deeply stuck in your worries, use the cancel-cancel technique. When a worry comes along, firmly and forcefully tell yourself to cancel-cancel. The worry will stop. It will be moved from the center stage of your mind. Of course, your worry might come back, and it might come back rather quickly. It may be your habitual way of thinking. No problem. Just keep on telling your mind to cancel-cancel when the worry comes, and it will eventually be eliminated. So what encouragement are you going to give yourself? The time to figure it out is now. 9. Learn the art of sauntering. Henry David Thoreau, the author of Walden, said, It's a great art to saunter. In other words, slowing down your life has great value. It helps to remove the worry. Of course, in today's world, slowing down seems to be an almost foreign concept. Like little Jeremy pointed out when he was getting ready for bed one night. His father still wasn't home from work, and the boy was scared. He asked, Mommy, why isn't Daddy here? She explained that Daddy hadn't finished his work at the office today, so he couldn't come home. He said, Mommy, why don't they put him in a slower group? Not a bad question, because nothing affects the quality of life more than the pace of it. Many people rush to get up in the morning, rush to work, rush to finish their work, and then rush back home. They never take time to get in tune with themselves and the people around them, and worries thrive at this rushed pace. By contrast, sauntering means moving at a leisurely pace. One of the simple ways to slow down and saunter is to take a walk. The rhythms of your body, mind, and spirit get in tune with each other when you walk. You'll begin to notice more and more of the things around you. You'll feel more at peace, and your worries will seem less significant. Thoreau struggled for a long time with worry until he learned the art of sauntering. It was so therapeutic that he went on to plead with people and tell them to live in each season as it passes. Breathe the air. How are you doing in that department? Are you living life now or merely rushing through it? Goodbye, worry. Hello, positive attitude. It would not be too much of an exaggeration to say that attitude is everything. In fact, your attitude towards something is often a great deal more important than the event itself. That's why the English poet John Milton wrote over 300 years ago, The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell a hell of heaven. And nothing does more to destroy your positive attitude than worry. Napoleon and Helen Keller made that clear. Both had plenty to worry about, but one conquered it and the other didn't. Napoleon had everything, fame, power, and wealth, and yet he said, I have never known 6 happy days in my life. Helen Keller, on the other hand, who was blind, deaf, and mute, declared, I have found life so beautiful. The difference was all in the way they handled their worries. Use some of the 9 techniques outlined above to remove your worries. As you remove your worries, you make room for your positive attitudes to grow. Worry exercises. One of the most destructive, negative feelings is worry. Worry is the number one block to risk and change. It also serves as a major obstacle to success, happiness, and achievement in life. Number 1. Evaluate your anxiety level. Indicate how much anxiety you have in each of the following situations. use the following scale: M for much, S for some, L for little. If your answer is much, write a sentence that explains why that situation worries you. For example, if in response to letter R, making mistakes, you wrote much, you might then write, "I'm afraid that people will think I'm stupid." The situations are as follows. A. Someone speaking to me loudly. B. Speaking in public. C. Being around crazy people. D. Being teased. E. Failing at some task. F. Being with strangers. G. Feeling angry. H. Being with people in authority. I. Having feelings of tenderness and love. J. Expressing feelings of tenderness and love. K. Being watched while at work. L. Receiving a compliment. M. Being criticized. N. Having someone express anger to me. O. Being ignored. P. Looking foolish. Q. Being disliked. R. Making mistakes. S. Having a lull in the conversation. Number 2. Tackle your worries. A. Discuss some of the things you were worrying about last year at this time. Were the worries real or imagined? B. What are your top 5 worries today? C. How is worry holding you back? For example, how is the fear of going for the big sale, promoting new ideas, or communicating your feelings getting in your way? D. Write out a plan of action for attacking each of your worries from above. Refer to and use some of the techniques discussed in this chapter.